My name is Susie, and I write for MIRP, which stands for Music Interviews, Reviews, and Photos, here in Portland, mm-hmm. Oregon. And I appreciate you taking the time.
No, my pleasure. I do have to warn you, I have a 10% battery, so it might end naturally.
Fine. I tend to ask a lot of questions. If you don't want to answer it, then skip it. I'll cut it so that we can get through the most important things.
I do that anyway.
Okay, good. So you're touring in anticipation of your new release for One Fire, which comes out June 7th. You're halfway past the U.S. tour. You're past the halfway mark anyway. And you have a small break, then you go to Europe and do like Grass Pop and Hellfest. Do you have a preference between club tours or festivals?
No, it's nice. It's a nice variety. You know, it's nice to. It's kind of like a pace shifter. It's so different. So it's kind of like going to a bar or going to a show. You know what I mean? Like attending, it's like it's a different thing. It's a different feel, and I love both. And because I playing in a show, like with 500 to 1,000 people, like in a tight environment. I mean, that's everything, you know. That's where you got your pulse. That's where everything is. You play for, you know, 50,000 people. You kind of disconnect it, but it's a different kind of adrenaline. So I really don't have a preference. It's just it's both like there's it's kind of like making love and having sex. It can be very different.
Do you feel a lot of pressure to keep things in front of people, like singles and videos and things like that, to keep people's attention?
No, I do it for the sake of myself. I mean, if I would have felt like I needed to have an audience, if I felt like I needed to have just to be a relative, I would have done something different. You know, I would have stayed with the times. I would have done something more popular and something that is more correct, or whatever you put it. Everything I do is because I love doing it. Everything I do is for myself, first of all, you know, and going out on the road and stuff and being away from family and everything you love at home, it's very hard. It's very hard. It's difficult. The only thing that justifies it is to do what you love.
I read that you said that Understand might be the most important personal video you've ever done, and I've watched it many times, and it's very powerful. I wanted to, first of all, thank you for talking about things like, you know, depression and anxiety and mental illness. When it was over, I felt like she just had to be resolved to the fact that she was just sort of stuck there. So I wanted to find out from you, if you were responsible for fixing the mental health problem in the world, what do you think you would do?
I mean, first, I had kind of unrelated, but related. We were in L.A. yesterday, and there's homeless people everywhere. And I go, I fucking hate this. And somebody goes like, I fucking hate it, the homeless people everywhere. And I was like, no, I hate that they have to be homeless. That's what I hate about it. Like, nobody's taking care of them. You know, we don't spend enough time to take care of our own, like, our own people. And it's horrible. And of course, these people, they don't choose to be homeless. And they just don't have control over their lives. And nobody's there to help them. And with a lot of help, this is the obvious way this place to start, because it's visible. Like, because you see it from the streets, it's everywhere. So that's a visible, you know, it's what you see. It's kind of like if you're missing a limb, you're missing a finger, you can see it. And people go like, okay, that's something is wrong. So that's a very obvious one. But what people don't see is everybody at home struggling with this day in, day out, like parents, kids, from their kids. Like I remember my first panic attack. I was probably 5 years old. And people will go like, just suck it up. It's all in your head.
Right.
And so you learn to suck it up, but it never disappears. And that's when it gets dangerous. And you think there's something wrong with you, so you just shut your mouth. And then you just try to deal with it until it's too late. And there's no warning. There's no warning for that. And that's when, you know, suicides and stuff happen. So, bad decisions in general.
Right.
But, you know,
I think talking about it and singing about it is something that you're doing, you know, positive for the world.
And that's really all I can do. All I can do is to tell people that it's okay, you know. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to just, it's okay. Like, just don't bottle things up. And what I really hate is people using social media as an outlet for attention. Because people, as soon as you use the outlets for attention, you turn people away. You need to talk about it. You can't just go like, I'm killing myself today. You know, like you post stuff like this, you're turning people away from the seriousness of what we're dealing with, what everybody's dealing with. You need to talk about things, and people need to listen, most importantly.
Right. Yeah, I think it's great that you are doing that. I think it makes people feel like they're not alone, especially, you know, fans of yours, to know that they, you know, have something in common that isn't something that most people want to talk about.
Yeah, and I said it's like I say, it's okay to be angry, and this is the place for an outlet. Like, you come to the show, it's okay to vent. You can get in the mosh pit, or you can dance, or you can jump, or you can just listen. It's a good place to vent, and it's a place to get all these things out of your chest and with other people. And because everybody there, even though you're angry, everybody's taking care of each other, you know,
right,
at the show.
When you do a video like this, do you have the concept in your mind and you communicate that to the video producer, or do you just turn the song over to them and let them interpret it?
It's been different from every video we've done. Like, the first video we ever did for Comic Crisis, I had no say, and I didn't even approve it, and I was just like, this is not going to be released, and it was never released.
Mm-hmm.
and that's when I was like, okay, I need to take creative control somewhat. And after that, I kind of had, like, you know, you snowball effect, like an idea with a director, and you kind of end up in a place where everybody's happy. The last three videos we did was with the same director, Jason Jensen, and for some reason, like, I talk to him and I'll have a crazy idea or like, you know, some kind of vision, and he just goes like, okay, like this, and I'm like, that's exactly the picture I have in my head. We have a very unique creative relationship, and not the last time we worked together, to put it this way. We still have, we already got some ideas for something else. And more importantly now, after Understand, or before we started doing Understand, I kind of decided, like, I want my videos to be a piece of something that I would like to watch myself as a movie. That it is visually and meaningful the same way as, like, what would I like to see in a movie? And I'm not talking about Marvel movies, you know. I'm talking about stuff that is important to me and that stuff that sits with me, like David Lynch movies and stuff like that, like stuff that mentally really influences me for doing art. And so I'm thinking that's the direction we need to go with videos too.
I love that. I love albums from start to finish when it's a story and you can feel each individual song, you know, and see the story in your head. That's great. I noticed on your track list, I haven't heard the whole thing, but you have an intro, an interlude at song 9, and no outro. Is the other song, is that a good outro? Is that intended to be a good ending to it?
It is very much an ending of a story. Because it's really about wanting to be heard and apologizing for not being enough for another person, and it's kind of for me personally, I can't say for other people listening to it, but for me personally, it's a very powerful honest ending of a story. It's not a happy ending.
I know that from talking to you and from seeing you live quite a few times, you're very passionate and very feeling in your writing. When you look back at your earlier albums, do you ever look at them and say, I can't believe how far I've come, or I can't believe how much I've changed my opinion on things?
Oh, yeah, you know, very, very much. I mean, like, because it's not even that long ago where where you felt like you had to provoke people, you felt like you were just doing stuff just to kind of stir something up, and you were doing it was purely for the music, but everything else was kind of like, I'm just gonna fuck with people, and you never expect people to take you literal, and then suddenly you realize like people are taking you seriously, and of course it was a lot of there's been a lot of emotions coming through the music and my lyrics and stuff and the old stuff too, but mostly it was kind of like staring things up, and then you realize you have a voice, and you realize that you can use that voice for something,
right.
And that's what I did, and so things have, for sure, things changed very much.
I read a statement where you talked about your biggest musical influences when you were a kid, you know, like Bowie and Prince and The Cure and Motorhead, and that surprised me. Are there any other traditional metal bands that you're a big fan of?
Well, it's like, you know, it's a Slayer, it's kind of one of the things. But I actually grew up mostly with punk, and the first band I ever found was different. I was 9 years old, and I heard "Give Me Convenience, Give Me Death" came out in 1994, and that Tennis, and I was 9 years old, and that completely changed my life. And that's what made me want to do everything I do. And that's why I did a cover of California Borealis, because that was the first song I heard. So that's why I did a cover of this album, because it's like kind of like a full circle, because Dead Kennedys got me to Lard got me to Ministry got me to like Mitzrev, Punchboard 2, and all this other stuff like that was kind of connected at the time, and that's what got me to doing what I'm doing right now. I mean, I grew up in a punk rock and a hardcore scene. I was like never part of electronica or anything like that until Joe Biafra went with Lard. That was everything to me, you know, growing up listening.
When you said Motorhead, it was the first concert I ever saw live with Motorhead, and it changed my life completely. I love those stories.
I actually have it's a great story, but let me. We played a festival in Sweden, and I'm standing there talking to a friend of mine who's in another Swedish band, Backyard Babies, and we're standing and talking in Norwegian and Swedish. It's very similar, so we're just talking to each other. And Lemmy just comes up, and he's just with his Jack and Coke in his hand, and he just walks up, and he just stands there and, like, kind of listens to our dialogue, and he's just nodding his head, like he understands what we're saying. He's so wasted. And we were talking Norwegian, you know, and he's just standing there, like, kind of nodding his head, like he's a part of the conversation. And I'm like, this is so bizarre. Like, Lemmy is just standing here. That's so cool. and then he was just like, cheers, boys. And he just cheered us, and he walked away. And I was like, it's like one of the greatest memories I ever had. Such a great memory to have, yeah.
Yeah, and even if he didn't know what you were saying, that he just stood there and tried, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if any of your other projects are active, but I just wanted to acknowledge them. So Icon of Coil, Panzer AG, and DJ Scandi, and Scandinavian Cock. With those, I wanted to know if any of them are active or will ever be active. And then you can write in like any genre. I mean, you've got from techno to dance to metal to rockabilly. Is there any genre that you haven't tried that you'd like to?
Well, it's funny enough, I'm working on another project. I never want to say that a project is dead, but all of those dead projects are on ice. I don't want to say they're dead, but they're definitely on ice. I do have a work on another project now that I said, I just recently said to friends that I gave them all the music that is recorded for it, and I said, if I go tomorrow, this is what I want to be remembered from. And it's that important to me. And it's, I don't want to reveal too much, but I'm still working on it. It's kind of a mix of all of it. It's more acoustic, not really acoustic, but it's I don't want to give it away too much. But
sure. Is there a general time frame that we would know, like in a year, in any feeling of a time when we would know what that is going to be?
Well, I'm so busy this year, but I'm trying to kind of wrap things up in between tours, hopefully next year.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No.
That either means I did my job well, or you wanted to know some more.
No. We kind of touched everything that I think is important. The only thing I want to say is, I don't think people realize how important they are when they come to the shows. I'm glad to see everybody coming out on this tour, and I'm glad to see people come to the shows. And you know, in the studio, it's just me, you know, and it's kind of just one thing. But live, the audience is the most important part. I don't think they understand that. The sound, the visuals, the music and everything is definitely important to them. But for us, the crowd is the most important thing for the entire show. So I just want to appreciate it. I just want to acknowledge that and let people know that